Good evening. Welcome to Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Sauver. I'm an employment law and business law attorney, and I host this weekly live talk radio show and video live stream every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m., where I have guests on the show and we discuss all the various employment and business related issues and topics that small and medium sized business owners are facing today, particularly in light of the COVID-19 pandemic and some of the challenges that come with it. And so in the spirit of that topic and that general theme, I'd like to welcome tonight my guest, Margaret Gandy, fellow attorney and co-founder of Alka Law, and also fellow attorney, Rena Paul, who is a co-founder of the firm Alka Law as well. So Margaret and Rena, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Sure. We have a treat tonight where we have two guests at once, so it should be interesting. I was like the feedback from different perspectives. So yes, I want to give you each a proper introduction, but I thought I would tell our audience about our topic tonight, which is a humanistic approach to crises in the workplace. And what Margaret and Rena and I will be discussing for our audience is just how important it is for employers and business owners to use a trauma-informed, emotionally intelligent approach when they're addressing employee conflicts or investigating and responding to employee allegations of issues such as sexual misconduct in the workplace. This evening, my guests, as I mentioned, are fellow attorneys Margaret Gandy and Rena Paul, and we will discuss what a trauma-informed approach looks like in addressing these employment matters, as well as why it is more successful than using only a litigation risk or liability analysis to guide employers' actions. So this discussion will include the use of this trauma-informed approach in coordinating HR trainings for your company or conducting those sensitive internal workplace investigations and acknowledging how COVID-19's collective trauma may be a factor to consider when addressing sexual misconduct and other sensitive issues in the workplace. So with that, I really feel perhaps a good introduction of each of you might be in order, a little more detail here. I'll start with Rena Paul, Esquire. Rena, prior to co-founding Alka Law, Rena served as a prosecutor for 13 years, and she began her career at the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, where she was a member of the Sex Crimes Unit and handled misdemeanor and felony cases of all kinds, from arraignment to appeal, including domestic violence, financial crimes, and homicide. Rena went on to serve as a federal prosecutor at the United States Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of New York. And Rena led complex investigations and handled trials and appeals in cases involving criminal enterprises, gang violence, and sex trafficking. Rena conducts trainings on trauma-informed lawyering and attorney well-being, which as an attorney, I could say are quite needed in our profession. She also has trained prosecutors nationwide about these topics and has led yoga, meditation, and mindfulness programs for lawyers, including at the New York City Bar, where Rena is a member of the Mindfulness and Wellbeing Law Subcommittee. Rena is also an adjunct professor at Brooklyn Law School. So Rena, it's great to have you on the show this evening. And of course, don't want to leave out Margaret, Maggie Gandy, also Esquire, co-founder of Alka Law. Margaret served as a prosecutor at the state and federal levels for more than 15 years. She too has extensive experience trying cases and conducting complex investigations. Maggie has recently served as an assistant United States attorney in the Eastern District of New York, where she was appointed as deputy chief of the organized crime and gang section. Margaret focused her federal practice on prosecuting racketeering enterprises engaged in victim-based crimes, including sex trafficking, murder, robbery, and identity theft. Margaret began her career at the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, where she served in the Rackets Bureau and the Office of the Special Narcotics Prosecutor. While there, Maggie conducted investigations into matters involving money laundering, public corruption, international drug trafficking, and terrorism. So I have to say, it's quite an impressive background that you both bring to your current firm, Alka Law. Really some really gritty experience there.
Thanks. Yeah. So, I mean, I think we both sort of started our careers in the same way, working as a prosecutor for more than a decade each. And that gave us a real foundation for being opening the firm that we have. I mean, we like to call the some of the skills that we developed as prosecutors hard skills as opposed to soft skills, which we can talk about. But hard skills are the types of things when you think about a lawyer that you tend to think about, right? So investigations, trial work, appellate work, the things that when you see a lawyer in a suit on television, you think that they're doing. Those things we got a lot of experience on doing as prosecutors, and we learned how to solve problems and be strategists, how to seek the truth and find the answers to hard questions, and how to be calm under pressure.
Mm. And all of which, I might add, seems very fitting for your current role at Algolaw in terms of the investigations you conduct and the training and the way you approach clients. Which I think is a nice segue into my question for each of you, which is, you know, tell us a bit more about yourself. You mentioned some of your background, Rena. I'd love to hear from Maggie too, but I'm wondering what prompted you each to delve deeper into this trauma-informed approach of legal matters, and how did you come together to form your firm?
Yeah, well, as Rena said, you know, as prosecutors, you really are, in one sense, crisis managers. You know, you are people, there's been a crime and there needs to be an investigation and ultimately a prosecution. And over the years, Rena and I, because we overlapped in both the state and federal level, we had a lot of closed door conversations where we were, you know, discussing the work of the day, but also sort of recognizing that both of us were employing a trauma-informed approach before we even had language to label it as such. Mm. And by that, I mean, you know, we saw colleagues who, you know, particularly in the U.S. Attorney's Office, incredibly skilled advocates, you know, impressive pedigrees, lots of experience in the field, but sometimes they do a one size fits all approach. So the conversation and the way they'd enter a room to have a conversation with, you know, a bank executive would look exactly the same as a violent crime victim. I think what Rena and I had the benefit of from our DA's office days was having spoken to people in all different walks of life in the city, all different experiences, and really in different ways, all experiencing trauma. I mean, it's obvious that a victim of a crime experiences trauma, but even a person touching the criminal justice system as an accused party is experiencing trauma, as are their family and friends who care about them. And so Rena and I really just found that being trauma informed, and again, even before we knew to call it that, was a skill unto itself. And it was an expertise that makes you a better investigator, it makes you a better prosecutor, and we hope and we believe that it makes you a better practitioner in the private sector as well. Mm. And that's why we wanted to focus our firm sort of leading with emotional intelligence and employing trauma-informed approach in our investigative and legal guidance work, because it produces a better product.
Yeah. And so those are the soft skills that, you know, as opposed to the hard skills, those are really the soft skills. The knowing how to connect with somebody, knowing how to sit with somebody, be with somebody, and approach a case with an emotionally intelligent perspective. Those are some of the soft skills that Maggie and I felt like we shared when we were doing that work that we wanted to bring into the private sector.
Mm. And I think those soft skills, you know, really are so important. I think people often look to simply the hard skills and the experience and education and training for those hard skills that you mentioned, right? The litigating, the, you know, drafting motions, making oral arguments, drafting appeals. But I really hear you about how the trauma-informed approach and being able to emotionally connect with people can be so beneficial in lawyering and practicing law. And I love what you said a moment ago, Margaret, about how you saw people do the one-size-fits-all approach. And I guess you and Rena recognized that it wasn't the best strategy for the victim whom you're serving technically, right, as the prosecutor, or for the individual who is accused of the crime. And I think you made a really good point there as well, that anyone touched by the criminal justice system, including the offender, can be highly severely traumatized. And so knowing that, taking that into account, can lead to perhaps a more productive conversation, better outcome. Would you say that pretty accurate statement, or?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And the same is true in the employment law space, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, even the classic scenario when you hear the word trauma is the victim of a horrendous crime, and that certainly lies. But frankly, you know, even a person being accused of misconduct in their workspace that may jeopardize their career, regardless of whether they've done the offending conduct or not, is likely experiencing a traumatic response. And that's going to manifest itself in the way that they respond to the investigative process. And it's to the client's benefit, the employer client's benefit, to understand that and to have that awareness as you march through the steps that need to be taken in order to arrive at the proper employment action decision.
You know, it's so true. I think that even with, especially in employment law, I find because there's a human drama element, there's conflict, there's people who feel betrayed on both sides, right? The employer often feels, especially in a small business, I've heard the clients of mine who employers say, I treated this person like family, you know, I gave them extra bonuses when things were tough to get them through. I met their kids and I feel so betrayed. And you hear the exact same thing from the employee as well, that they feel that they gave their all to this job and they're being unseen, unheard for their pain and experience. And I think you both, you know, I think made good points about the soft skills and how it is a really good connection and correlation to employment law. And I wanted to ask a question for both of you here, maybe a nice follow-up, which is, you know, we're talking about the trauma-informed approach, but maybe we can define this for our audience listening tonight. Like, what is the trauma-informed approach, and how is it used in, let's say, investigations or compliance or HR training? Can you share a bit about that?
Yeah, so it might help to first define trauma, because that word can be can mean a lot of different things, but it's important to note that you can experience trauma by a life-threatening event or something difficult happening directly to you, witnessing it happen to someone else, learning about a close loved one, experiencing it, or some job-related exposure. So trauma is a really broad word. And being in trauma-informed means being aware that trauma impacts the matter that you are working on and being able to understand, recognize, and respond to it as you respond to in your work. That's basically it. And it doesn't mean dismissing traditional investigations and compliance risk management services. It really is enhancing it. Mm-hmm. We see that in most, but not in all cases, especially in cases that are involving sexual misconduct in the workplace, that managing a case with this sort of a lens really enhances the way that an employer is able to respond to a crisis.
Mm-hmm. Margaret, any thoughts or anything to add to what Rena just noted? Or
I think just the idea that, you know, as Rena's saying, it empowers the employer to make a more informed decision and really, you know, appreciating that you often have, you know, a complainant and an accused. But the reality is that a trauma-informed approach sort of trains the employer to look at the impact across the community. I mean, that's true in criminal work, and it's true in interpersonal dynamics in any community setting. So a workplace is no different. An employer is benefited by the awareness that how I manage this A and B situation is going to impact my entire workforce. And so if I do this well, I will have a more positive or at least a less damaging impact in my community. So that sort of sensitivity is a real value.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a really good point that one of the points that you each made, and Rena, I heard you say it first, is that the trauma-informed approach, it's not an either or. I don't hear you saying this, throw out the traditional investigation, throw out, you know, assessing evidence and gathering. It actually enhances and augments that process. And I from my experience, just, you know, working with clients, I find that having an emotionally intelligent and sensitive approach can lead to an enhanced trust. And I think that any attorney who really wants to serve their client, in this case, the employer or a business owner, the more you can establish trust that you're reliable, you're not going to judge them, that it's safe to talk to you, beyond just the, you know, attorney-client privilege that people just hear about and know about, the more you establish that trust, the more you're able to really get to the truth and have your client give you information and not hold things back out of fear, out of their own trauma and the results of that. So I really tend to agree with you both there. I think it's a, you know, an excellent approach, like trauma-informed, emotionally intelligent. And I want to talk more about this with each. I want to hear more about it from each of you. We have so much to say on this topic. We have our first commercial break at 5:15 here. So I'll just tell our audience that you're listening to or watching Employment Law Today on Talk Radio NYC. I'm your host, Eric Sauver, employment law and business law attorney. I'm here tonight with my guests, attorneys Rena Paul and Margaret Gandy, co-founders of Alkalaw. So when we come back, we'll talk more about the trauma-informed approach and how it can be successful when you're dealing with the situations that we're discussing. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Sauver, and my guests tonight are co-founders of Alkalaw, fellow attorneys Margaret Gandy and Rena Paul, and we're talking about a trauma-informed approach to addressing crises in the workplace. And I really can't think of a better topic. You know, it's interesting. I've been doing this show for about 11 months now and had various guests from the conflict resolution arena, from employee relations, people who approach things from a toxic work environment and how to resolve it. And it seems that the common thread with successful people in dealing with workplace issues is that emotional intelligence piece, right? Those soft skills that Rena used that term and that Maggie mentioned as well. Just the use of it, I think people are coming around to that more. I think the term maybe 20 years ago, you know, may have been seen by some as kind of out there or mystical or something like that. But I think it's really a very valuable and valid approach to workplace investigations.
Yeah, it might have seemed kind of soft, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. I wanted to ask you just like a follow-up question on that for both of you, which is, so in talking about this trauma-informed approach, like, what are some specific ways it might benefit an employer or an organization? And why would it be beneficial when you're investigating more sensitive issues like sexual harassment or employee misconduct?
Well, I think, you know, as Rena said, this is not supposed to be, out with the old and with the new kind of an approach. And I think it's important to remember that a trauma-informed approach, even though it may sound, you know, sort of soft or antithetical to, you know, hard-driving litigation strategy, the reality is a trauma-informed approach is good business because it is a litigation avoidance strategy. It's not a foolproof approach, of course, but, you know, people sue often for money, but they also sue often to make sure that their voice is heard, to feel like they've stood up for themselves, to feel like they, have taken a stand against what they perceive to be an injustice. And I think Rena and I, in our work as prosecutors and in our private practice as well, have seen that there is a way to do an investigation that ends at a result that a party does not like or agree with. Mm-hmm. They don't have to feel burned by the process. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you can do no harm, do no additional harm in the process, then the end result is not as hard a pill to swallow. And because of that, I think the way that you move through managing a crisis, if you use a trauma-informed approach, mm-hmm. it can be a very effective litigation avoidance strategy for employers. We also think it just creates better outcomes. I mean, you know, you alluded to it too, Eric, that the trust that needs to be created between an attorney and their client is the same trust that needs to be created between an investigator and the person they're interviewing. It's, you know, you're a stranger to them. So how you enter the space, how you present yourself, how you interact with them, how you respond to their answers to your questions mm-hmm. is going to impact whether you get more fulsome answers or less fulsome answers. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about really difficult situations, particularly sex-related misconduct claims, there's a lot of embarrassment, there's shame, there's, you know, processing the trauma of a potentially awkward or even assaultive situation. And if you can put the person at ease by employing trauma-informed approach, you know, it's not going to be a comfortable best friends kind of a dynamic, but it can be a more constructive conversation. And an employer or client is best served by your work as a lawyer if you give them as much information as possible from which to make an informed decision, because all the decisions are going to be bad or difficult. But the way that you as an investigator or a lawyer interact with the people you're trying to learn the facts from can have a really big impact on how those facts are conveyed to you and how much information you really have to work with to suss out what's happened and what needs to be done about it.
You know, you talked about trust, and another key component of being trauma-informed is really respect, and respecting not only the, you know, the people with whom you're interacting, but the power that you have in to make a decision in a situation like this, and understanding that you can make that decision in a different way. You could make it in a very unconscious way that could create some litigation risk that you may not have anticipated, because mm-hmm. you're right. Even if you're not, you know, even if you are right, you still may face some risk that you otherwise wouldn't have if you handled it in a more conscious way, a more mindful way, and a way that is respectful of the people that you are dealing with. Understanding that, you know, you're dealing with, as you said, I think at the beginning, Eric, there are people on both parts of the equation who are managing the situation differently and experiencing their own level of difficulty and trauma as a result of the circumstance.
You know, you both, Maggie and Rena, said some great points there. And I think the very last point that I heard you say, Rena, about how a person might, whether it's the employer, for example, or the employee in a contentious situation, might unknowingly, right, or sort of unconsciously exacerbate a situation, create more perhaps of a rift or more conflict, or do something that might be considered retaliation. It kind of reminds me of something I heard about trauma from a colleague a while back in talking about a slightly different issue, where it said, I hear that they say trauma often comes out in a person in terms of a reaction, maybe more so than a memory. So there are plenty of people who might have very vivid memories of some sort of severe trauma, and many people who might be repressing those memories. And so, but you can see the trauma in how harshly they respond or how angry they get. And if a person is not aware of that tendency, and if their investigators or counsel attorneys aren't aware and mindful of that, and they're not trying to, you know, assuage that person's feelings of fear or, you know, PTSD that's coming out, then it could really create some disconnects and do some damage. So I think it's really, really powerful point about, you know, the answer to the question of how this trauma-informed approach is beneficial.
You know. That's right. And, you know, lawyers are tend to be very linear in their organization of information, and a traumatized person or a person dealing with trauma often is not. And so you're exactly right that being able to assess the way that somebody is responding to the experience that they had, a trained investigator or attorney is able to understand how it might manifest in an interview And that really turns on credibility determinations, as well as general fact-finding and the ability to gather other evidence that can support or refute what the person is telling you. So understanding that is really critical, and why we would recommend for employees or business owners who are managing a crisis situation, if you are doing that with an internal investigative team, to have that team trained in trauma-informed practices. And if you are working with somebody who you're bringing in as an outside counsel or investigator, to have that person also be someone who deals in trauma-related and trauma-informed practices.
Is that your approach as well, Maggie, when you're working, say, with the team or outsourced, trying to get people on board to make sure they also are trauma-informed?
Yeah, I think it's a critical part of, you know, sort of how you fill the space as you're managing the crisis. Because, you know, one thing that a trauma-informed approach allows you to do and to sort of educate your client about is that everyone has biases, right? I mean, you know, how many times have you heard, well, you wouldn't be so defensive if it were true, or some sort of, you know, construct or expectation how somebody telling a true story should behave or look or be perceived.
Yeah.
Don't have that sort of self-awareness and mindfulness about how trauma manifests itself when somebody is relaying an event that is been triggering for them, then you could really miss the boat. I mean, you could really draw the wrong conclusion because your own sort of sense of how an aggrieved person should or would act, or how I would act if that had happened to me, can get in the way of the truth. And that's not serving anyone. And I would, you know, I think the related sort of practice or discipline there is to be aware that, you know, the trauma doesn't even have to have originated in the workplace. You know, as you said, Eric, somebody can have a reaction, and that reaction seems sort of maybe outsized for the scenario that you understand to have been the event that led to the conflict. But people's trauma can be triggered from all different, you know, it could be historical trauma completely unrelated to the workplace that gets triggered by an offhand comment that three people in a room would think was innocuous, but the fourth person has an incredibly personal and dramatic reaction to because of what that triggered within them. And so you don't want to be in a place where you're sort of tone deaf to the reality that your employees are people who come with all different life experiences into your workplace. And the way that you make space for them and manage them can have a positive or negative impact on your workplace culture. And a trauma-informed approach can really help you navigate that more nimbly.
You know, I think it's really a point to speak to the point of how not only should a company's attorneys in employment law scenarios be trauma-informed, but how important it is for their HR and their staff and they themselves to be trauma-informed as well. I love what you said, Maggie, just about like how, you know, with the trauma-informed approach, you might, if you don't have that approach, you can really miss the boat in terms of the conclusions you draw. And I think that's so true. You know, we look at like, say, you know, old 80s and 90s, like police dramas or crime shows. And it's usually if the person is, you know, sweating and vociferously denying something, it's like, oh, they must be guilty. Or, you know, and we tend to think that in our society, like, you know, the saying, we think thou dost protest too much. But sometimes one protests, you know, too much in quotes, and because it's, you know, striking a core in them. Maybe they were accused of something wrongly in their life and it was a traumatic experience. Maybe it's bringing up for them their own internal conflict or struggle. So I think to be mindful of that and compassionate for their suffering can really help, as you mentioned earlier, both sides either avoid litigation or settle the litigation, resolve something or dispute before it gets that far. Really, you know, I think point worth noting. So something I take to mind with my clients as well, make sure that they don't jump the gun or assume something when they tell me, I told the employee this and they said that, and therefore it must mean that, you know, they're a lying criminal. And it's like, well, hold on here, you know. But no, I think those are all good points. I really speak to the benefit to an employer organization of this type of approach. If you can believe it, and it's time for another commercial break, but don't worry, we'll come right back with my guest tonight, Margaret Gandy and Rena Paul of Alkalaw. And we'll be talking with you, our listeners, and walk you through some methods and some concrete, perhaps, approaches that Maggie and Rena might take with their clients, i.e. with you, if you were a client of theirs. So listening to Employment Law Today, I'm your host, Eric Sauber, Talk Radio NYC. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Do you feel uninformed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Employment Law Today. I am your host, Eric Sauber, employment law and business law attorney, joined tonight by my guest, Margaret Gandy, and Rena Paul, both attorneys and co-founders of Alka Law. And we're discussing a trauma-informed approach to workplace investigations and HR trainings and how that approach can be beneficial. And, you know, before I get to my next question, I just wanted to say that something that, Margaret, you said earlier, really, I think, kind of stuck out for me, like a kernel of wisdom there, among many that you're both sharing tonight, which is that, you know, with a good settlement, and we talk about this a lot, but as you know, attorneys will say a good settlement means that both sides are slightly unhappy and that there was some movement and some true, perhaps some fairness involved. But you also said something about how in a settlement that might satisfy an employer or a client resolution, that the process, right, that they feel that they were heard, that their truth was heard, that the process that you went about was dignified, listened to them, respected them. I think that's so important. And I think it's a both and. It's not, as we're saying, none of this is saying that the process is all that counts. I mean, but I see so many attorneys who they sort of advertise and talk about in their, you know, right, the outcome. And that's important. What you can get for a client, can you dismiss the case against them? Can you get a settlement? Can you resolve things? Can you win a trial? But if we're not sensitive to the needs of the client and their trauma, they might feel quite unsatisfied. Whereas if they had the exact same outcome, but they felt heard and respected, and not rushed or pushed or pressured, they might have a very different outcome in their mind. So just wanted to share that. You know, I think it's a really good point you made. I wanted to highlight it for our listeners tonight.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, you know, it's true in litigation. You can approach litigation as an academic endeavor. You know, it's a wins and loss, a strikes and balls approach. But you're really missing the point, I would argue. You know, I mean, litigation is a human experience. It is somebody feels wronged and wants to be you know, sort of validated in that grievance, or they want to exact punishment out of the other party. And so if you sort of ignore that, really, it's just another manifestation of like human conflict in a courtroom where you have human beings generally, you know, as your jury, being the arbiters of what did or did not happen or what punishment or reward, you know, should lie from that, then you're really missing part of the strategy and really part of the best part of sort of trying to get at a result that achieves something for everyone and makes a bad situation no worse than it already is.
The do no harm, do no further harm approach you mentioned earlier. I think it's, you know, it's really good points. And I know we're talking about this sort of the theory and the mindset behind the trauma-informed approach and the benefits. And I wanted to ask you both a question. Perhaps if you could walk our listeners through maybe some methods that Alcala uses, some examples of this sort of like how a trauma-informed approach looks in action. Can you take us through a couple of methods you use?
Sure. So we work both with small companies and organizations that don't have general counsel or in-house attorneys, as well with organizations and companies that do have general counsel or inside attorneys that are in need of help with our background in particular and are facing a crisis that involves something particularly sensitive that they want to seek outside guidance for to assist them in their process. So I think, as Maggie said before, we often are dealing with people or companies who are in crisis. Something has just happened. Yeah. And the first thing that we want to do is understand the needs of the client, the culture of the organization, and the policies that are in place. So what are we working with? And what does the client need? The second is that we triage and problem solve the immediate crisis. So that might mean conducting an investigation. And a lot of times when you say to somebody, we're going to conduct an investigation, that sounds, especially when you used to work as a prosecutor, that sounds like a very cumbersome and expensive proposition. And sometimes it is, and sometimes it's not. So an investigation can be a huge, you know, far-reaching, long-term investigation that has a lot of moving parts and pieces, depending on the situation, or it could be incredibly small, a very limited investigation to understand really more about what has happened, gather facts. And the idea for us with the clients is to empower clients with more knowledge of the facts, because as we all know, in dealing with a problem and trying to make a decision, the more information that you have, the easier it becomes. Even if all of the decisions aren't great, because nobody loves to hire an attorney when they're in a great situation, they tend to come when they're in a difficult situation. But having the most amount of knowledge that you can collect is important. And then we provide guidance, legal guidance, with the idea of litigation avoidance and restoring a healthy workplace. Mm-hmm. So considering really what are the potential litigation risks, managing them, considering communication, both internally and externally. And all of this really is under the umbrella of a trauma-informed approach. Mm-hmm. So dealing with it from the perspective, as we've been talking about, and as you pointed out, Eric, of dealing with understanding that you might be in a better position to defend against litigation or to manage a crisis if you're working from an empathetic and emotionally intelligent perspective. And after we manage a crisis like that, or assist the partner with the client to do so, we like to come and take the next step. And that's really thinking more broadly about what it means to run an organization that is trauma-informed or that is healthy and positive, and working with the leaders of the organization to try to customize solutions to not have a crisis like this happen again, or if it happens again, to have better systems in place to figure out how to manage it more effectively, either internally or, if necessary, externally.
Yes.
And I'd add, Eric, you know, one of the things I think we've seen in some of our engagements is that the trauma-informed approach is a practice, you know, it's practitioner-based in the way that Rena and I both, you know, intentionally interact in these spaces, in these engagements while doing investigations and advising clients. Mm-hmm. But there's also sort of systems or protocols you can put in place as an employer that are trauma informed without necessarily even knowing that it is. So for example, one thing that we know is very, I don't know if comforting is the right word, but that is a good practice when dealing with a sensitive investigation or a sensitive crisis, mm-hmm. whether it be sexual misconduct related or something else, is to provide the person who is experiencing trauma mm-hmm. with a clear roadmap of mm-hmm. what's going to happen. Is there a timeline? If so, what is it? If I'm going to be asked to interview with someone, who am I interviewing with? How is that information going to be managed? And making sure that they, as best as possible, can sort of see a roadmap of how this process is going to unfold.
Right.
The element of surprise is incredibly triggering to someone who is coming to an experience from a traumatized space. And so to the extent that you can provide some sort of clarity of guidance of at least what the process will look like, it can often lead to a more, a better bond of trust between investigator and interviewee, that there's not sort of a gotcha energy involved and that there really is meant to be an earnest look at the facts so that an informed decision can be reached on the back end, while allowing them to feel some degree of empowerment through the process that they know what to expect, what is being asked of them and what it will look like. So that they can prepare themselves emotionally.
Yeah. I mean, really what you each said, Rena and Maggie, it's like music to my ears. I love this, you know, as an attorney who believes in this same philosophy that you both speak of, but focusing on you and your firm and how you work with clients. Like, I think the thing you talked about, well, first, Rena, what you mentioned in terms of just the different steps of understanding and gathering information and using a trauma-informed approach to do that. And then you talk about like a triage of the big problems. And I think when we do that, I think clients get a little bit of a sense of calm, right? They maybe move out of that panic space because they're feeling that something is being resolved. And just the whole idea of like legal guidance for the future, that's an important one. I think a few attorneys miss that. You know, they respond to the initial crisis, but what is the underlying like system that's flawed or faulting, especially if this happens more than once? And I think, you know, some clients might be more open to looking at like, hey, what's under the surface here? What's really going on that's causing these problems to repeat? They might be more inclined and more less defensive. And if they feel understood and not judged, and they feel, you know, that they also have a roadmap. And that whole point, the last point that you made, Maggie, about just, you know, being specific and detailed, right? Outlining the roadmap ahead is something that I think, you know, we as lawyers really ought to take to heart. So just, you know, some thoughts there. We are coming up on a commercial break in about a moment, and rather than ask you a new question, rather sort of leave that for after the break. When we come back, I'd love to hear more, maybe we can talk more about just resolving workplace harassment and also how your trainings might assist other attorneys and lawyers. I know it's part of your practice as well. So why don't we take our break now, and folks can come back and listen in to Employment Law Today on Talk Radio NYC. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Employment Law Today. I'm your host, Eric Sauber, employment law and business law attorney and host of this weekly live talk radio show and video live stream every Tuesday at 5 p.m. and on Talk Radio NYC. And here tonight with my guests, once again, Margaret Gandy and Rena Paul, two attorneys, founders of Alka Law. And, you know, I wanted to ask you a question. I realized I didn't want this question to slip my mind before the show is over. Putting aside from the attorney's training you do, wondering what, so how might this trauma-informed approach look or work, let's say, with companies going more remote, right? More of remote work settings with COVID-19 and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, fortunately, you know, COVID, for all the tragedy it's brought and distress it's brought to all of our lives, disruption it's brought to all of our lives, mm-hmm. you know, for some people, it has created a space to sit still long enough to sort of reassess, you know, am I happy in my employment choices? Mm. Am I where I'm living? Am I happy how I'm living? And so, you know, it's important for employers to take note of that and, you know, obviously be mindful of the fact that employees may make different choices going forward. In the context of investigations, you know, one interesting development that Rena and I have seen is that the Zoom space and this sort of remote access to investigative interviews has actually not been a terrible thing, particularly mm-hmm. when dealing with particularly sensitive topics, sexual misconduct related claims. Mm-hmm. We have found that a number of people have expressed a preference for doing these interviews remotely because now I'm talking about an incredibly embarrassing or traumatic experience, or I have a lot of anger surrounding this or stress, whatever it might be, but I'm doing it from my own living room or my own bedroom. And I have, you know, my coping mechanisms right at the ready. I'm not in sort of a sterile law office conference room or at my employer's, you know, at my desk at my employer's office space where this situation occurred. It not only allows people to feel that comfort of being in a familiar environment that's more, you know, an easier place from which to open up and share intimate thoughts and experiences. But I think it also, it neutralizes the fear that the employer might be listening or my colleague might be listening or, you know, that sort of lack of control of knowing what's around you. You are in control of the space you're sitting in from which you're sharing these intimate details of your experience and feelings. And so that is one development out of COVID that frankly, I think Rena and I have been a little surprised about, but mm-hmm. pleased to see makes it easier for people to participate in these processes and these investigations, again, in the spirit of sort of making them as comfortable as can be to extract as much information and as accurately as possible.
Mm. Hmm. Rena, any thoughts about what Maggie just said in terms of the remote Zoom being could actually create a more comfortable space for witnesses to come forward or sensitive issues to be discussed? Or
yeah, I think we've all gotten somewhat unfortunately used to living in this virtual reality, and as a result, people are tend to be comfortable sitting in their homes, and we've all, you know, we do our socializing in this way sometimes. We've now we've done professional, all of our profession in this way. So I think people we have seen are comfortable sharing stories more. And we thought in the beginning, this is going to be a hindrance because nobody's going to want to share an intimate story like this over this medium, but we found the opposite. And for employers and business owners who need to conduct an investigation, it can also be a cost saver because instead of having attorneys fly to here and there to interview people or travel here and there to interview people, it can be a cost and a time saver. Everybody can meet during Zoom on their own schedule. It's very easy, much easier than former the way investigations were before, in the before times, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I must say, I too was surprised when to look at how this pandemic and this sort of little box, like, say, you know, on screen, like living that we're all doing for the last roughly 17 months or so, how that's played out. My thinking was that it would hinder investigations because you can't build as much of a trust or rapport with someone. You know, you're sort of like separate and there's a screen and it's not the same as having body language to read or to put out vibes. This is a safe space to talk. But, you know, to both your points, to Maggie's point a moment ago, the person that doesn't feel like they're walking into like the lion's den, if they're an employee being asked, you know, sensitive questions about, let's say, their behavior or what they witnessed somebody else doing, and knowing they have control of their environment is a positive. And of course, that second positive that noted a moment ago, Rena as well, just the time saver and the cost saver that, you know, I'm also finding that with clients, I can do things without having to travel back and forth. And so we can have a court conference for a court located in Nassau County, federal court or downtown. And it's just, the time it takes to go on Zoom or to make a phone call. I know there's pros and cons, of course, to this. And I look forward to, of course, the time when, you know, we can actually see people from the chest down and not just, you know, a head with a body. Like I went to a networking event that was live last month and met two colleagues I had not met in person ever, just by Zoom in the pandemic. And just was surprised a little bit. You know, one was much taller than I may have envisioned. One was also, you know, a different size than I may have imagined. But it's funny how you get used to seeing a head on a screen and then someone's, you know, like 6'4", you're like, oh, wow, this is a whole different. but I think it's, yeah, really good point there.
I thought you were going to say you wore sweatpants and
right. Getting to, you know, that's the new nightmare, right? You know, you walk into a meeting or whatever and you're, you know, in sweatpants or t-shirt, shorts and sandals, right? And a button shirt and, you know, but yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the last sort of question I wondered was in terms of like, Rena, you mentioned your mindfulness meditation practice and I have one as well. And I don't know, Maggie, I think you, did you mention you might be do a practice of mindfulness too or meditation? But wondering how that might be used with when you're talking to clients or when do you ever encourage your clients to employ such practices?
Yeah, so we believe that trauma-informed lawyering and well-being are completely linked and have spent a lot of time over this last hour talking about how to conduct this work. And it's really an art and not a science, being trauma-informed and working in this way. It's something that is born of experience, but also there's training that can help you do this kind of work if you are a new lawyer or a lawyer who hasn't done a lot of work like this in the past. And one of the things about being both trauma-informed, we do training on being trauma-informed and we do training on well-being for lawyers. And both of these things, I mean, this is a podcast unto itself, but both of these things circle kind of around self-awareness. And as you know, from practicing mindfulness, that becoming more mindful, whatever practice that is, and it doesn't mean go and meditate on a mountain, though it can mean that. It means employing a practices and bite-sized practices into your daily life that can help you become more mindful in your work. And that helps you to be able to understand better how you're perceived and biases you may be bringing into the work that can affect you. So that can make you a better practitioner overall, cultivate these soft skills that we've been talking about. And if you can go to our website to look more about our offerings, but we really believe that well-being is linked to doing this kind of work effectively.
You know, there's so much there. As you pointed out, Rena, that can be a show unto itself. Maybe in the future we can come back for encore round two. Sure. But since it is about roughly 5 to 6, I thought I'd give you both a couple minutes to share any info, how people can contact you, how to reach you, any upcoming events you might have. Floor is each of yours.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Eric. It's been a really a wonderful experience for Rena and I to be able to speak with you. And I think in many ways from our discussions, both here today and offline, that we share a lot of the same ethos in the way that we approach, approach helping clients navigate these difficult situations. Yes. We've touched on a number of the services that we offer, not only, crisis management in the form of legal advice and investigative practices, but also the trainings that are related to well-being and trauma-informed approach to conducting investigations for clients that have in-house investigators, whether it be an HR department or otherwise. And so we would invite anyone listening to please check out our services, which are described more fully on our website. That's alcalaw.com, alcalaw.com. Mm-hmm. To reach us by email at info@alcalaw.com. Again, that's alcalaw.com. We'd really welcome the opportunity to explore with anybody the ways in which we might be able to navigate a crisis or even build out, a path by which to effectuate change to a healthier workplace. I mean, we respond to crisis, but we also hope to be helpers in effectuating change so that you prevent the next incident of harm in your workplace. It's not a line always, but it's certainly worth the investment.
Yeah. I want to thank you both, Maggie Gandy and Rena Paul of Alcalaw, so much. Thank you for joining us tonight, on Employment Law Today. You're joining me. You really touched on some great issues there. In the next maybe 30 seconds, I'll just wrap up and just say again, it was a pleasure having you. The people, you can go to the Alcalaw website and the email address that was just given by Margaret. I'm your host, Eric Sauver, and you're listening to or watching Employment Law Today. Tune in to Talk Radio NYC Tuesdays at 5 p.m. for more episodes, and I wish everyone a good night. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL, every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.